This is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield. Last weekend, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson became the subject of some unfortunate news.
Secretary of State Rex Tillerson's visit to Asia seems to be taking a toll on him. The Korea Herald reports that he turned down a meal with South Korea's foreign minister and acting president and prime minister because of fatigue.
Yikes. That's kind of embarrassing. Not true. But embarrassing, the supposed snub was invented by someone in the South Korean press and quickly took on a life as an internet meme. Hashtag Tillerson is tired, which isn't likely to go away soon, and for which Tillerson has only himself to blame.
Because he didn't have a press corps with him, he was not able to counteract that spin.
The Washington Post's Glenn Kessler was a State Department journalist for 9 years, chronicling the diplomatic efforts of Secretaries Colin Powell, Condoleezza Rice, and Hillary Clinton. He says that Tillerson, who has declared that he's, quote, not a big media press access person, made his own bed when he left for Asia not with the usual press contingent, but one lone journalist. He thus lacked the pool of media eyewitnesses to counter fake news with truth.
Well, you know, you first have to understand that the State Department Press Corps, it's a pretty distinguished group of people. These are usually people that have covered the White House before or have been foreign correspondents. And they tend to be a kind of a nerdy bunch, very deep in the issues. And they will often know as much or more about the issues than the Secretary of State.
Perhaps uniquely in government coverage, the press corps traveling with the Secretary of State perform not just as eyewitnesses, but as, in a way, participants in the evolution of policy as a sounding board or foil. Tell me the role that those people in the Secretary's plane play on a foreign trip.
One particular instance I remember in 2005, the Bush administration was facing real diplomatic problems in Europe, because the Washington Post had exposed the black site prisons that were used for detainee interrogations. And in order to calm the furor, Condoleezza Rice read a statement at Andrews Air Force Base, a very carefully crafted statement, before her departure for Europe. And then we got on the plane, and she met with the reporters for a further briefing. And I had crafted a question that identified a logical inconsistency in the policy that she had outlined. And she could not answer my question. So she then went to the front of her plane with her staff and said, "We have a problem here. We need to fix this." And she then contacted the White House and said, "We've got to figure out a way to answer Glenn's question." And they worked for a couple of days to come up with language. And a day or two later in Kiev, Ukraine, when we were waiting to have a press conference with her, one of her aides came up and said, "She would like you to ask your question again." And she then had an answer for it, which solved the problems that Europeans were having with the very first statement she had put out. And it actually then smoothed the way for her to attend a NATO meeting where the diplomats were very pleased by what seemed to be a new shift in American policy. What I did was I identified a serious hole in their policy as articulated by Secretary Rice. And as he told me later, that they realized they had that hole and hoped no one would notice it. But because I called them out on it, they realized they had to address it.
Which gets to the old rap against State Department reporters that they go native and they start wearing tweed and smoking pipes and they forget that they're with the press and imagine they're part of the diplomatic corps themselves.
I would argue that a lot of our coverage of the secretary was often very skeptical. I mean, I wrote a book about Condoleezza Rice, which she was not particularly happy about. And when we were traveling once to North Africa, one of the Al-Qaeda groups there put out a statement saying that it was time to smite the head of the snake. And someone asked her if she was worried about this death threat. And her response was, "Not really. Glenn writes worse things about me every day."
All right. Okay, fine. So you're adversarial.
You know, one big difference from covering just about any other cabinet agency is that you are on the plane with the secretary. And so you're there on the plane with the aides. You know, you would kind of gather around the bathroom and track people down and ask questions. You know, Condi Rice had a tradition. On a long trip, she would set aside an evening just to have dinner with the press corps to further explain what she was trying to do and how she was trying to do it. Hillary Clinton did a similar thing. You know, you would meet her at the bar later and just talk about what was going on and how they were trying to do it. So the coverage is often very critical and adversarial. We're testing their ideas. We're probing. But at the same time, you have real access to a pretty senior government official that you often do not have in most beats in Washington.
But diplomacy is a particularly difficult environment for journalism because nobody says exactly what they're thinking. It's all code and subtext and formalistic language. And if you were to report only on what is actually said in public, you would never learn anything about anything.
A lot of it is interpretive. When I was covering State Department, one of my editors said to me, you know, Kessler, I realize what you cover is fog. Sometimes it's light fog, sometimes it's gray fog, but it's always fog.
And it's because you know the code, right? There's a certain hieroglyphics of diplomatic speech that you have to understand, which I guess is why the diplomatic reporting ecosystem is what it is. So how do you, as a diplomatic correspondent, cover the news without performing some sort of de facto PR function for the administration?
Well, first of all, you need to have sources in foreign governments. When I wrote about North Korea policy, I got some of my best information from Japanese and South Korean diplomats, which I then would run past American diplomats who would then reluctantly confirm what I had learned. It's not just taking the bits and pieces that you get from the administration, but it's really triangulating among all the players. So I'm writing about the Middle East. I'd go to the Palestinians. I'd go to the Israelis. I'd go to the Saudis. I'd go back and forth. It was a game of running around and talking to as many possible people as you can.
Getting back to Tillerson, what is he depriving himself of by not having a press pool accompany him on these trips?
Well, he's not getting feedback about the messaging that he's trying to send. And he's also missing the opportunity to send messages to his foreign counterparts before he even gets there. Colin Powell and Condoleezza Rice in particular were very good about always having an on-the-record briefing with the reporters before they landed in a new capital. Every single leg, on the record, answering questions. And a lot of times, we would be asking things about what was going to be coming up in his or her meetings in that particular capital, say, Seoul. And then when we landed, we would all file stories. That meant that the diplomats in Seoul would already see what the message is of the administration as they're coming there, before they even have a meeting, and then they can respond to that. It would advance the diplomacy ahead of whatever private meeting they were going to have. It would send signals to the newspapers and the think tanks and everyone else in that country. So already they've accomplished a lot before they've even stepped foot in that capital.
Just to be clear, this is not unique to the American press. All of the other foreign ministers also have a press corps, and they are using theirs in precisely the same way. So Tillerson's showing up at a gunfight with a penknife, huh?
Right, or he has a gun that doesn't have any bullets in it. Yes, that's exactly right. Because I don't think you can function without having the media there. On Hillary Clinton's first trip, she got in huge trouble because of an answer she provided about how she was going to raise human rights in Beijing, because he seemed to dismiss it as an important issue. And all the human rights groups made a big stink about it, and the State Department immediately arranged for her to meet with dissidents, and she adjusted her language on how she was talking about human rights, and she learned a better way to deal with that issue. A lot of the questions are really challenging, and they have the effect of forcing U.S. officials to understand whether or not the policy they're pursuing is even viable. The reason you have the media around is in order to advance your policy objectives, and he's not going to be as effective a diplomat if he's not talking to the media.
Glenn, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Glenn Kessler was a State Department journalist for 9 years. He currently writes the Fact Checker column at the Washington Post. That's it for this week's show on the media. It's produced by Mira Sharma, Alana Casanova-Burgess, Jesse Brenneman, and Michael Loewinger. We had more help from Sara Kari, Leia Fetter, and Kate Bakhtiarova. And our show was edited this week by our executive producer, Katya Rogers. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineers this week were Terrence Bernardo and Sam Baer. Jim Schachter is WNYC's vice president for news. Bassist composer Ben Allison wrote our theme. On the Media is a production of WNYC Studios. Before I sign off, a reminder to go to our website, onthemedia.org, and sign up for our weekly newsletter to be entered automatically to win a hat crocheted by Brooke. I'm Bob Garfield.
Support for On the Media comes from the Overbrook Foundation and the listeners of WNYC Radio.